The governor of Illinois, Richard Ogilvie, tonight ordered 6,000 troops of the state's National Guard to move into the west side of Chicago, where there has been an outbreak of violence, vandalism, and looting by Negro youths. Earlier today, in the same area of Chicago, a number of high schools were closed after students demonstrated in support of their demands that they be given the day off in honor of Dr. Martin Luther King, who was assassinated 1 year ago tomorrow. For a report on the beginning of today's violence, here is ABC's Howard Tuckner in Chicago.
The police reacted quickly as the students and older black persons in the area threatened to get out of hand. The disturbances broke out at about noon when a number of youths left classes on this, the west side of Chicago. It's the same area where rioting broke out in Chicago a year ago. The police tried to use soft tactics, but it was apparent they were quite concerned about how far the youths were ready to go and whether quiet tactics were the best thing. As one police officer put it, these kids and grown-ups seem to mean business again, and we're not going to get anywhere with them if we don't show that we mean business. Bricks and flying glass injured 24 persons. About 250 persons, including some women and juveniles, have been detained by police, who are now in the area in great force. Howard Tuckner, ABC News, Chicago.
Chicago's Mayor Daley tonight ordered a citywide curfew to be in effect from the hours of 7 p.m. to 6 a.m. tomorrow. Everyone under the age of 21 must be off the streets of Chicago during those hours. As we said, tomorrow is the first anniversary of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr., and Easter weekend marches in his memory are planned throughout the nation. The movement Dr. King headed has spent much of this year searching for a new identity. ABC's Don Farmer reports from Atlanta.
The sign in front of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference office here in Atlanta has not been changed since Dr. King died. The official leader now, of course, is Dr. Ralph Abernathy, but there are strong factions within the SCLC. They are not really trying to get Abernathy's job, but they are attempting to change the course of his efforts. Some staffers want to join with black militants. Others want to emphasize anti-war activities. And still others want Dr. King's widow to take over and lead the movement in her husband's name. Publicly, Abernathy has held on so far. He invokes the memory of Dr. King with every public utterance. Now, Abernathy is starting his first big nonviolent project since the Poor People's March last spring. After the Easter weekend marches, the SCLC will launch a series of confrontations, first in Alabama, then elsewhere. The goals will represent each of the factions within the SCLC. Racial pride, economic opportunity and equality, peace in Vietnam, and almost as an afterthought, racial integration. Well, this project will be a test both for Abernathy's leadership and for the tactic of nonviolence. If he fails, the SCLC may just fold up and become nothing more than a sign over the door. When the future of nonviolent protest is discussed here, we often hear the phrase that, well, they killed the dreamer, but they cannot kill the dream. The fact is, the dream of nonviolent protest is in disarray. It is not dead, but it is seriously ill. Don Farmer, ABC News, Atlanta.
The White House said today President Nixon feels this is a time for all of us, whatever our race or creed, to rededicate ourselves to the principles of justice and nonviolence. Officials of the District of Columbia are concerned tonight that the anniversary of Dr. King's death may cause disturbances there. ABC's Sam Donaldson reports from Washington.
Come to the corner of 14th and U, where the riot started 1 year ago, and you can't avoid hearing the rumors of new trouble planned for tomorrow night. Rumors fueled by black militant charges that the city isn't doing enough to commemorate the first anniversary of Dr. King's assassination. The militants are demanding that Washington stores close all day tomorrow. The white-oriented Board of Trade recommends against it, and most stores outside the ghetto areas won't. But inside the ghettos, even merchants who don't really want to close will, to avoid trouble. Suppose there's a paper being distributed here now which says black group tells merchants close your store or see it go up in flames. Does that scare you?
Well, it doesn't actually scare me because it happened to me once before on 14th Street. Actually, I'm willing to do what I can to go along with them, but also I'm trying to make a living. I don't really believe it is necessary. I don't really think so. But if, like I said before, I'm not afraid, but to go along with them, I'm willing to close.
On Tuesday, 150 people invaded the city council chamber and delayed the council meeting for an hour with their bongo drum accompanied demands that Friday be declared a full holiday and that all businesses be forced to close. The council responded by calling on the mayor to do what he could. Yesterday, the mayor announced he had no authority to meet either demand, but could grant liberal one-day leave for city workers, and he did schedule an official memorial service. Will that be enough to ward off trouble?
If you're asking whether the city is going to be appropriately protected, I would say it will be. I don't think that if the question is, are we planning specially here, I'm really planning a memorial service and hoping that everyone will observe peace and tranquility, and hoping that everyone will unite and join in a form of memorial that would be appropriate to the memory of Dr. King.
If trouble comes, it will come from a very few. But the neglected wreckage from last April testifies to what even a few can do. So the authorities have no choice but to listen to the threats and rumors and be ready. Meanwhile, the federal government is wrestling with the larger big city problems. For that story, here is Joseph C. Harsh.
This is decision weekend for President Nixon on what is to be done about cities, slums, and poverty. His urban affairs advisor, Patrick Moynihan, and his welfare secretary, Robert Finch, are flying to Key Biscayne tomorrow with plans and recommendations. But these plans acknowledge enormous obstacles. The great cities are in fact bankrupt, their people's problems are beyond their dwindling resources. An end to the Vietnam War offers little help, even if it comes. At most, it will only release $4 or $5 billion for the cities. Many existing programs are out of date, out of balance, or inadequate. But inflation is the president's number one national enemy, and new programs could feed inflation. Many a bad program is embedded in old voting blocks. Presidential advisors lament that translating right priorities into old programs might take as much as 5 years. There will, of course, be a multi-million dollar token program for rebuilding burned-out slums, but beyond that, probably little new. Joseph C. Harsh in Washington.
In the past few days, there have been demonstrations in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and Palm Springs, California, that have had nothing at all to do with race or with politics. This Easter holiday, as in other years, students and non-students have flocked to the resorts to observe their own peculiar rites of spring. Well, last night, the fun and games turned into violence and near tragedy. ABC's Bill Brannigan reports from Palm Springs.
Attendance this year at the annual Easter Week gathering set new records. Estimates ran as high as 20,000 young visitors to the desert resort. By day, the atmosphere was relaxed. One local resident described the scene as one big sleeping bag. The tide spilled over onto the usually neat boulevards of this desert city. Although a brawl had erupted at a music concert the night before, there was nothing to indicate a repeat performance as the sun was setting last night. But outside the stadium where the second concert was going on, a mob blocked traffic, then hurled bottles and rocks at passing cars, police, and finally a gas station that became the center of the battle. Our ABC camera, turned toward the gas station, recorded the next events. The mob scattered, and the trouble began to subside as more police and an ambulance arrived.
Court Harvey. Be careful.
17-year-old Richard Bradford is reported in fair condition today. No charges have been made. The district attorney's office is investigating. This is Bill Brannigan, ABC News, Palm Springs, California.
A dance planned for tonight in Palm Springs has been canceled, and authorities are trying, although not very successfully, to persuade the young people to leave town. I'll have more news in a moment. In other news today, Pope Paul lashed out at church liberals for the second day in a row. The Pope said the Catholic Church is being fragmented by a ferment that he characterized as practically schismatic, referring to a breach of faith. The Pope expressed his anxiety about the church after celebrating Holy Thursday Mass in Rome. Czechoslovak Communist Party leader Alexander Dubček told his country today that any more anti-Soviet demonstrations would bring back Russian troops and tanks to Czech cities. Dubček issued the warning on a national broadcast in which he urged compliance with new restrictions imposed at the insistence of the Kremlin. These new restrictions include pre-publication or pre-broadcast censorship and increased use by the secret police of eavesdropping devices. Former President Harry Truman, who is almost 85 years old, honored the Key West Naval Base with a visit today, and the Navy in turn honored him. ABC's Charles Murphy was there when the Navy delivered its salute.
Three, and two.
Naval guns fired 21 rounds over the Florida Straits as a salute to the former commander-in-chief. Mr. Truman has been vacationing at Key West and today made a rare trip outside his villa to pay a sentimental call at the naval station he visited many times as president. With Rear Admiral Frederick Brush at his side, Mr. Truman trooped the line. With the help of a cane, he walked quickly and spryly down the front ranks of a Marine platoon, looking over each man. Age has made him thinner, but it has not bent him. Later, Mr. Truman and his family went to the Little White House for lunch with the Admiral. The house, which serves now as the Admiral's quarters, was used often by Mr. Truman on his winter vacations here. Before lunch, he posed for pictures. Mr. Truman, who will be 85 next month, will end his annual vacation here Sunday. This is Charles Murphy at Key West, Florida.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Now, with some further thoughts on how to rescue the cities of the country, here is Howard K. Smith in Washington.
Whatever President Nixon decides to do about our cities, one thing is sure: if it's going to be effective, it's going to cost more money and probably much more money. Senator Ribicoff, who studied the cities most closely, says they have to have $150 billion of federal funds over the next 10 years if they're not to die. The trouble is, as Joseph Harsh noted a moment ago, there isn't any more money. Income taxes are as high as the public will take. There is no more blood to be got from that stone. Clearly, the long postponed time has arrived. We've got to reassess what we're spending and get rid of non-essentials to pay for essentials. If, for example, cigarettes are as dangerous as doctors say, multiply the federal tax on them. The British did that with great financial benefit to the country. There are, a budget expert has said, at least 26 federal programs no longer needed but still on the books, from free milk that well-off schools no longer need and huge tax allowances for oil men to unneeded military bases that are kept going only to please local congressmen. As bad as any is government payment to big farmers for not farming. One California farm giant gets a $4 million gift from the government each year for not using its land. Another gets $3 million. Senator Eastland of Mississippi is only one planter who is paid $100,000 a year for not planting. The money the cities need is there, being paid to interests that do not need it. Somebody has got to begin the squeeze. Maybe, as the campaign slogan said, Mr. Nixon's the one. Frank?
Thank you, Howard.